Welcome back to Tag Team, everyone, the Pokemon Trading Card Games premier podcasting duo. My name is JW Kriwal, and as I'm giving the intro, you know what that means. Riley is out of town. He's actually in California, where our next guest is. I am so excited to be joined by Perth Regional Champion 2019-2020, Top 8 OCIC 2019, World Champ in 2019, and your Milwaukee Regional Champion, Henry Brand. Henry, welcome to Tag Team.
Thank you very much, JW. I'm glad we got the most prestigious achievement finally on the weekend.
You finally won a legitimate event.
Yeah, finally. It's just all these League Cups, man, after one after another, you know. Finally. So we've done it. We've made it.
You earned some respect in my book.
Sure. Somehow. Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me on. It was a really good weekend, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah, it was fun seeing you because I wasn't expecting to see you there. So we just kind of passed like before the tournament, and you know, we were talking and like, hey, what are you playing? And you're like, oh, I'm playing Gardy. I'm like, oh, that's really interesting considering how bad quote unquote the Lost Box matchup is. We'll get to all of that, of course, coming up. But yeah, it was just like so bizarre seeing you there. I was like, wow, what's going on? Oh, and then we talked, and you know, you're saying, hey, I'm staying for a month.
I talked to Alex Szymanski, and he like basically jumped out of his skin. I think I saw it. I was like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, hello? Am I in the upside down world? What are you doing here? So there you go.
That's really funny. I mean, you don't see too many Australians over here for a regional. So
no, you don't. For good reason. It's a fair bit away.
I mean, now I got to start poaching the Australian regionals. I feel like.
Well, I think we've shown which one's more difficult now, JW. I don't know if it's poaching. If you want to travel all that way to go 0-2 drop at a League Cup, you're welcome
Yeah, you give me too much credit. No, that's great. I mean, I'm so happy that you're able to make it. And like, kind of tell listeners what your travel plans are for this month, because obviously I kind of teased, you're still in America and there's a couple more tournaments coming up. So
there is, there sure is. I've got this story like synthesized to like the perfect combination now. So I've told it enough on the weekend. So everyone goes like, you know, why are you here? So I'm not going straight back home. I was coming for NAIC and then I've got some family. So I was like, yeah, I'll visit them for 2 weeks before. And, you know, adjust to the time zone. And then I saw there was a regional the weekend before that in Fresno. And from Australia, you have to fly like over the West Coast. So originally I was like, you know what? Cool. Let's do it. And flights are so expensive from Australia anyway, that adding like one small stopover is really negligible. Like it's almost the same price. And then I was like, wait, there's another one the week before. And even though that does make it a little bit indirect, I was like, why not? Like I missed two Australian regionals this season. I didn't go to one and I casted the other. And so I was a little bit like behind on points. I didn't come to chase day two, but if like it happens, it happens. And it looks like it might happen as a result. But so we had Milwaukee and now Fresno next weekend and then a couple of weeks and then NAIC.
So, that's quite the Pokemon schedule for the next month. That's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the top chase. Oh, what is it? Top 16 chase, right? For your region.
16.
Top
four.
Four? Oh, it's top four. Yikes.
Well, that's the other mission, is that I'm over here to hopefully win enough tournaments in the US that TPCI might give us maybe even two extra spots back. I'm hoping that maybe if I come and win everything here, I'll get like a little, like, you know, special favor from TPCI.
Now that would be fun.
That'd be cool, right?
I would definitely send in a support ticket on your behalf.
Thank you. This is the goal. But oh man, that's a hard part, right? So previously I would always kind of like be a bit lazy in Australia and not go to the bunch of the tournaments, not grind the cups. But if you want to get day two at the moment with only four people, you can't really do that. So at the moment so 3 weeks ago, I was on 190 championship points. So I didn't have my invite. I was like 10 off.
Sure.
And then I got it. So I won a challenge and then I won another one and then I won a League Cup. And then I came to the US and that's when Australians started making some memes about the day two race. I don't know if you've seen any on Twitter.
I saw the one with the ice skaters. That was very funny.
Yes, the ice skaters one. Yeah. So they started making the memes, and then I came, and then I just kind of like I started 7-1-1, and people were like, yo, like it's gonna be some good points here, and everyone's like, oh, you know, Henry needs like, you know, 60 points, like top 32 at each, and then like, you know, a cup win just to match the people on like fifth and sixth going into NAIC. Yeah. And so now I've jumped them all.
So in one tournament, it didn't even, you didn't even need three tournaments, you know, you needed one.
Well, now I'm laughing. So I've jumped, and the person who's in fifth, the fourth at the moment is on like 505, and third is about 515, I think. And they've got one cup finish each, but the person in fourth, who's like 35 points above me, is not going to NAIC. Mm-hmm. So I've got a regional and NAIC, and I still a cup to go on them. So I'm in like really good spot now.
Seems pretty likely. I hate to say that it's all locked up, but
seems pretty likely. We can't say that. I'm not currently in the top four. So if I get no points from now, then, you know, bust.
Okay. Well, that's still pretty impressive. I mean, obviously that 200 point bump is very special. We should talk a little bit about how Milwaukee went for you. Is this, I mean, you know, we kind of teased it a little bit earlier, like, you know, you were talking about your League Cups, the Australian League Cups, which is kind of the American colloquialism for your regionals. And so how, you know, do you feel any sort of, you know, pride, like winning for your country? Or are you just a dude who just won a tournament? Like, do you get to talk smack to all the Americans, or do you not really care about that?
Oh, hell yeah, I do, man. Are you kidding? I mean, look, I didn't, you know, I was joking like casually. I didn't in the broad scheme of things. There were a lot of like plans, you know, jokes behind the scenes and stuff of what I could do. But I had the, so I said a line in the interview. I don't know if you watched the finals interview. But I talked about, you know, you guys, Americans always say, or people always say, I don't think I specified. I want it to be pretty, you know, diplomatic. I said, people always say, you know, Australia only has like, you know, 50, 100 people at their tournaments. And, you know, it's so small. And so I said, but, well, this one counts.
Yeah, right.
And so that was the titular line. And I've been workshopping the interview just in case. I was like, man, I gotta do well. Like, and if I do, I gotta have the exact perfect interview to say, because all of Australia's gonna be watching, and they're gonna be stoked that finally someone's, you know, disproving the whole thing. So, I had it workshopped, and it's such a big deal. Like, seriously, for me, but also like, I mean, there's like a lot of, and I'm sure lots of people tell you this, but you know, I've had a lot of good results over the years. I've got lots of top eights, like, you know, lots of, I won two regionals, and a special event, and top eight OCIC, but there's something about like after you win worlds, it's almost like you've done it, but then like you got to back it up. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you got to back it up. It can't be a fluke. And so this is kind of like, even though I know to myself that I don't have to back it up, it's still kind of nice. Yeah. And this is just sick. Like, this is so sick. And I think also like the touch on is like, for me personally, I don't get that much practice at big, long tournaments. And LAIC, I was doing really, really well. And I just made like the dumbest mistake you'd ever see. I just didn't even see that Evil Tile was in my deck, like the in Lugia, the Amazing Gear. I thought it was prized. I didn't even see it. And then I searched through again, and it was there. And if I had seen it, I would have won. And I was like so frustrated because I was like tired and the long tournaments. And so I'm always a little bit worried about my stamina when it comes to the tournaments. And I held on pretty well this time. So that as well is like a big thing for me.
Was there anything about an American tournament that surprised you? We kind of talked about this actually in Milwaukee. You're like, wow, there's so many people here. Like, where did all the bots come from? They just all spawned in for this tournament.
I didn't say bots. What I meant by that statement, I said specifically, I remember this because I said it to a few people. I said, like you guys, like AI generated like 1,000 players. And I don't mean that in terms of like the skill at all. I just mean, how can there be so many people that play Pokemon?
Yeah.
Like, where are they coming from? Because in Australia, like, you know, everyone that plays.
Yeah. Right.
Like pretty much, like, you know, even the people, you know, maybe aren't the top players, you know, everyone. But here it's like, man, there's just so many people. And it's just, I get what people mean now when they say that call Australia tournaments League Cups. And I don't mean that by difficulty, but even to me now, like they feel small and different. And honestly, the pressure feels way higher in the Australian ones than the US, because it's like, we have three tournaments. Like,
yes.
I was laboring over card choices before like the Night of Milwaukee. And then it hit me like, wait a minute, I've got another one next weekend. Who cares what I put in my deck? Like, I can bomb and I've got another tournament next weekend. Like, this is sick. There's no pressure.
Yeah.
You know, like, compared to Australia, where it's like, oh, this is like the one thing and it's going to count for top four and like the stipend and the travel award. And if I don't get it, like,
yeah, there's so much emphasis put onto each individual tournament. Whereas here in the States, you have a lot of options. You could even fly, you know, it's easier to fly to some of these other countries too, from some of, you know, our airports to get over to Europe, to get over to, you know, special events and things like that.
That's one thing I forgot to touch on. Yeah. So, sorry to cut you off. It's one thing I was going to touch on is the other thing that feels so good about winning a US event is that you also do see a lot of other countries complain or people complain that US players go to their special events or stuff like that and take points. Well, it's kind of like the reverse effect here. It's kind of fun. And it's like, you know, it's like the underdog compared to like the other way around. I've come to like a region with 1,100 people rather than like going to like with 50 and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
how dare you?
Take some points off, yeah. Yeah, minus 200 NA, plus 200.
You're disgusting. You disgust me, Henry. That's awesome. Yeah, that's, it is. And even since I've been playing, about 12 years now, and just to see the level, like my first regional that I won was like 350 people. And we were all like, oh my gosh, that's a huge tournament. And now they're, you know, some of these regionals, they're turning people away. You know, they just don't have room for everyone. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I can't believe it, honestly. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, hopefully you get more years to, you know, maybe make this a regular thing, Henry.
Oh, I'd love to. And I honestly, it was so much fun and it's something I'd like to do. I like seeing a lot of people that I know in the US. It's great. And also actually fun milestone is that like now a player from every major region has won a US regional.
That is cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Pablo won a regional in Vancouver, and then Tord won last year in Peoria, and then Milwaukee this weekend.
Very cool. That is a fun fact.
Yeah, there you go.
So, all right. So let's talk about the tournament run. Why, you know, you're sitting there, you know, maybe even on the plane ride over the night before, you're deciding, you know, Guardi, what should I put in? What should I exclude? Like, why did you, first of all, choose Guardi? And then talk to me about those last, you know, 58, 59, 60, maybe 61, 62, kind of those last five, six cards that you were trying to fit in the list.
Yeah. So the list I played is fairly similar to like Guardians at the moment, I guess, like similar to Tord's latest lists. And I only made like, I think I changed two cards. So I was playing almost exactly towards this from Malmo for a little bit. I was playing Champ Festival though, instead of Temple, because no one played Lugia in Australia, like at our league cups and stuff. But I thought we'd see a lot of Lugia in the US. I thought more people play it. I wanted a bit more of a backup on Temple. Yeah. So that was that change. And then the only thing I was really unhappy with playing two Research, but I knew I wanted the second Gust effect. And it was like a really, really big deal into Lugia, into Arceus, into Mew, which I expected to be probably the three biggest decks I would play against. And so I really wanted it. And Serena's kind of like the cheat way to get your third Research and your second Gust. It's like a little bit worse than both, but most of the time it's like fine. And it was really, really valuable. And actually, so I was testing with Jake Earhart for this event, who I think is like, was a really good player. And actually, I think he's a really, really nice guy. I think he's funny as hell. But so we were testing and we wanted to play the second Gust. And he's like, I was like, but I don't want to play, you know, two Research. Like, that sucks. And he's like, it's only slightly worse. And you only get it's only worse 8% of the time you'll open hand it instead of a Research. And the first game of the tournament, first round, Serena, no Research. I was like,
Jake, curse you.
That's funny. But it worked out fine.
Okay. Well, clearly. Oh, you think it worked out fine, Henry? Oh, okay. All right.
Clearly, right? But so most of the time it's fine. And the second Gust effect is really, really invaluable. It's just so good. And then the other card, which was a little bit stand out, is a bit different, was Choice Belt.
Yes. Yes.
And that was cool. And I think like what I liked is that I was playing 12 energy for a long time, just like, you know, Tord was. And I thought it was really good, and the only reason I could play a choice but instead of an energy is because it's essentially the same thing in terms of ramping your damage early on,
right?
So like you need to hit really high, really quick against Arceus, and Choi Spell helps that. It counts as the same as the 12th energy. It's slightly worse, obviously, when it comes to just like retreating and Greninja, but in general, it's good. Also lets Baby Guardy hit for a ton of damage out of nowhere, which definitely caught people off guard and added some like volatility to my deck, mm-hmm. which otherwise it didn't have. Mm-hmm. And the big one is that it stopped Umbreon mean look locking your Gardevoir EX. So when we were testing Umbreon against it, they could sometimes bring up your Gardevoir EX with boss, and they would mean look and move some damage with Alakazam and like trade more favorably into you. But with the belt, you can just slap it on the Guard EX and then take a knockout.
Yeah.
Which was a big deal. Yeah.
That is really fascinating. Did you play a lot of Umbreon decks in Milwaukee?
I actually played no Arc Umbreon, but the choice belt was really good. It was really good. Yeah, I played no Arc Umbreon. I played some Arctina, and it was good against them. Like, you know, you can do a choice belt Gardevoir and knock out their basic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really good like that. The other thing actually that it's surprisingly really good for is actually against Lost Zone, funnily enough. It doesn't sound like it would be, but it's hard to knock out Dragonite with your Zacian and like your Gardevoir.
Sure.
You put so much damage on yourself, right?
Sure.
But the choice belt means that you can go like choice belt, manual attach, 4 energy on Zacian, and it's still got 140 HP, so Sableye can't knock it out, which is like can be a really big deal.
That's or really Gardevoir valuable. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good call. You have here, just for the listeners at home, I'd just point out, you know, 2 Gardevoir, 2 of the Shining Arcana Gardevoir, 2 of the Zacian V. You know, you mentioned that Serena, so 2 Professor's Research, 1 of the Serena, 1 of the boss, you know, just kind of some of these more interesting card choices. The last one I want to talk about, I mean, this seems to be the trend, and I get it, but just from your perspective, why did you play the Forest Seal Stone over the Sky Seal Stone? And did you play any Mews over the weekend?
I did. I played 2 Path Mew. I beat them both. My 2 losses were, funnily enough, to Andrew Hedrick, which is a pretty good loss to take. Mm-hmm. And he also opened triple VIP, Colress from hand, Comfy in the active. So I feel like if you're going to lose any game, it's probably to Andrew Hedrick with that opening hand. And the other one was to Maridon, and that was a bit embarrassing. So I did manage to beat the Mews, but the Forest Sealstone, man, was so good. Like, the Sky Seal Stone is bulk. It is terrible. Like, it's not. Like, it's fine, but you can't not play Forest. Like, you got to play Sky in addition to it. Because Forest is, like, live in every single matchup. And if you play Sky lets you catch up, right? Like, well, Forest can mean you just don't fall behind in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's just always good. Like, you can always use it for something. Like, if you have to research it away, you can just, like, jam it on the Zacian and still use it. Like, I would have lost the finals without it because I forested for a VIP or else I had like no setup at all.
Yep.
So that was fantastic. And then, I mean, I used it like every single game. And I think it was just like the best card in the deck.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you're playing such thin lines of like, especially your supporters, right? So I imagine like force sealing for the Roxanne or, you know, if you can save it to the late game, you know, for the penny or for the Roxanne or for the
collapse,
the boss, right? Exactly. Things like that. So good.
And it's a big deal against Lost Zone, like really big deal because the matchup is really, really complex in like term of a card game way. And like a lot of it is to do with the card advantage the Gardevoir has because you're like, you can't just freely leave Curlias in play. So the fact that you have like 2 copies essentially of your power cards with Forest Sealstone when you have limited draw is like a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Helps you get out from under those like early game kind of awkward starts for sure. So, okay, we'll talk about the finals in just a second, but I do want to talk a little bit more about kind of your tournament run. You mentioned you played some Mews, obviously you were playing some Lost Box. Mm-hmm. What was going into the tournament? What were you expecting? And then how did that match up to what you actually played against?
Well, I think we had a pretty good read on the meta. Percentage wise, I think it was slightly different. I expected Arceus to be the most played deck. It was actually Lost Zone. But I feel like enough people picked Arceus, like that we had a pretty good read on it. Like I know that Rahul played Arceus Umbreon, but there are a lot of people played Arctina. Like I mean, I played against a few Arctina. So I feel like I had a good read on that. I thought there would be that, Mew, and then obviously Lost Zone Kyogre is like always played. It's very popular, but I felt that Lost Zone specifically, which I know we'll talk about more in detail, but I felt that if I played against that and that I played better than them, that I would win, which is always a really nice matchup to take. or some of the Arceus matchups, if you draw a bit too slow, then it's, you know, not as, like, they're not as, I guess, skillful. Like, if you just don't have the energy to take a knockout, you're too behind, you lose.
Yeah.
Which is more tricks you can do against Lost Zone. And so it ended up being okay. I played, what did I play? 6 Lost Zone decks. Out of, what, how many rounds did I play?
15.
18? Yeah. So well, one third okay, of my rounds. Yeah,
18,
were,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One third of my rounds were against Lost Zone. And then I played maybe like 3-4 Arceus decks. And then I think 3 Arceus decks, but 4 Lugia. I played a Gudra and 2 Mew and then a Maraidon. So no mirror or anything. But they all pretty much went how I expected. The games are close. Like Guardi has a lot of 50-50s. It doesn't just blow anything out of the water, really.
Right.
Unless you, you know, draw really well. But so it ended up being about what I expected. And I also thought I had a really good read on the Mew and the Arcana decks, that none of them would play gloves. So I thought it was a really good call for the weekend as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I played Gardevoir because I like the deck and I want to be having fun when I'm playing Pokemon. I think that's actually a really big deal because, like, you concentrate way better if you're getting, like, enjoyment out of what you're doing. So I really enjoy Gardevoir. I'm going to play it. It discards cards. It draws cards. It's pretty cool. But yeah, so no gloves in Mew, no gloves in Arctina, so the matchups were, you know, even slightly better.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really good insight. I mean, do you expect that to be the same moving forward, or you know, heading into Fresno, would you expect there to be kind of a counter reaction to Guardi winning?
That's a really tough one to answer. I would assume so, but maybe not by top players. So I would say maybe you're like, maybe, you know, a middle of the range player might adapt with the gloves just by the Guardi matchup. But the thing is, like, it feels like such a bulk card in every other matchup that it's not great. Like, gloves okay for Mew into Lost Zone, so you can, like, psychic leap the Sableyes and stuff.
Right.
But
sure.
Other than that, like, you really need belt in so many matchups. Arctina needs belt, Mew needs belt. So not having it feels really, really bad. I don't know if people want to adjust to that, especially given that I don't really expect Gardevoir to actually spike that much in popularity, because, you know, it feels weird saying this given I've just won with it. Like, it feels like a bit of a, you know, self-congratulatory statement, but it is a really hard deck.
Yes.
Like, it is really tricky, and I was worried that I would, you know, mess up at times, but I was pretty happy with my play. But it's really tricky, and you have no margin for error in most of your matchups.
Yes.
Unless you draw insanely well, but yeah, you have, like, no margin for error. So just because of that, I would also, maybe even if the play rate rises, you know, you might not need that tech to beat your average guard of our player.
Speaking of playing on the edge, you had an ID in your last round. Is that correct? I believe because I'm just want to make sure I'm remembering it right, because we were cubing. I was playing Chips Cube, and you come over and you're talking to Jake. You're like, I'm going to ID and it's going to be risky and I might not make it. I might bubble, but, you know, I'm hopeful. So talk to me about your last round. Because you were 8th seed, and you ID'd in your last round when you could have played it out to guarantee the top 8. So talk to me about your thought process there.
Okay, so this is really funny, and this is like almost, this is like, I think it's quite funny in the end. And I was playing, so I looked at the stats and everything, and I won my win and in, and I got to 34 match points. So if I ID, I'm on 35, but it looked like there would be one person bubbling, and my resistance was very sketchy, like super, super sketchy. I was playing against Path Mew, and my opponent was on 35 already. So if he IDs, he's guaranteed, like, he's chilling. So originally I was like, I don't know if I ID or not. Like, you know, and then I was like, look, well, look, I think let's play it out. Like, you know, we'll see how we go. We could always, you know, decide to ID later on, but, like, you know, I think let's play it out. And I draw my opening hand. It's limiting on pass. So my hand is Lumineon, pass. And we had not, like, started time for the round yet, anything like that. And then I thought about it a bit more, and I said to my opponent, do you still want to ID? And he goes, yep. And so we signed it.
Because of course he would, right? Like, there's no reason for him to play it.
Of course he would. I mean, it turns out that actually there was a reason, because he still would have, you know, had good enough resistance even if he'd lost to make it in, and he should have tried to bash to knock me out, which is what he said, because he ended up pairing me in top 8. But yeah, so I was like, man, you know, I'm down to ID. If you are, see what happens. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. And we signed the slip, and I was like, whew. It's like, I think statistically I've got better chance to, like, you know, make it in by bubble than win this game against Pass and you going second when I'm going Lumineon pass. So worked out. And then I only made it in because one of the win and ins tied.
Wow. That's incredible.
I was in eighth spot and I would have been in ninth.
Wow. You know, it takes a lot of luck to win these tournaments. I mean, obviously takes a lot of skill. But speaking of luck for skill, your finals match, you know, I mean, that was on display, kind of how you had talked about the Lost Bucks matchup going. But it appeared from my perspective, you drew extremely well. So would you say that finals match was more luck or more skill?
Well, game one was definitely like luck. I mean, like I just didn't have to do very much, right? I got really far ahead. Game two, I played it really well, I do think, but it, funnily enough, and this is an interesting thing that I was saying to a few of my friends, that that's actually not how the Lost Zone matchup is meant to go from my side. That's not how I meant to play it out. So turn two Gardevoir is actually a bit of a trap. It sounds like, oh my God, he drew turn two Gardevoir. That's insane, right? But it's actually kind of wrong because, like I was talking about, it's a card draw like based matchup. If you could play with every card in your hand, you'd probably like win, but you can't because you can't establish curlier and stuff like that. So what you want to do is you want to get a bunch of curliers turn two and attack with the Zacian that you've powered up with its ability. And then you try and evolve all of your curliers on the following turn. And that way you have like you've more curliers to like draw cards to get into the Gardevoirs, and you end up drawing about like 6 to 8 more cards, I want to think. Because if you rare candy Gardevoir, you don't refinement that turn and you don't refinement the next turn. Mm-hmm. So you lose 4 cards there, and then you might have also not been able to set up as well. Right. I'm pretty sure I was forced to do it. I couldn't remember. I know I drew into 2 level ball, but I think it was after I already did something. So I think it was because I held a psychic energy because I had rare candy Gardevoir in hand rather than attaching it. I wanted to draw with Greninja. Sure. And then I drew into the level balls, I'm pretty sure. So, and then obviously I had to rare candy Gardevoir once I hadn't attached to the Zacian. So that's not normally how it goes. And it ended up being rough because I couldn't evolve my Curlier into the Shiny Arcana Gardevoir, which is what you have to do as soon as you can. Caleb should have knocked out the Curlier with the Sableye damage and instead went for the Manaphy. And so then once I kept the Curlier online, I then had to evolve it into the EX rather than the Shiny Arcana, which also was a bit rough. But I mean, like, I would gladly do it so the Curlier doesn't go down.
Sure.
And then you have to lean really heavily on like concealed cards because you need to still be drawing things. My Penny was prized both games also, which is like a really big card in the matchup.
Yep.
So it was prized in the second game. Obviously, you did have a slightly so start, and I want the cram hit to go into the Zacian.
Yes. Right?
Like if that happens, then I'm in a really good spot. Like a really, really good spot because
presumably then you would trade, you know, 2 for 2, right? And then still have advantage.
Yeah. I mean, they still hit first, but you can Cresselia and put it out of Sableye range, which is which is what I did. And it was a really big deal. But also, they have to choose. So you put like a leverage point there because either they knock out the Zacian and then you can evolve up your Curliers like unassailed, or they knock out the Curlier and then you heal the Zacian with Penny or Collapse or Cresselia. Mm. And then they're in trouble because now they've lost the damage that they did on the first attack. So that's like a really big deal. So you kind of make it awkward for them if the cram hit goes into the Zacian, which is what you want. So I think, look, I played well. I think the matchup is like very close. I know Azul and they still disagree. It is very close. But I actually had that a lot from my opponents. I played against Andrew, and when I lost him, and he said that matchup is way closer than people think, and he was playing Lost Zone. And I played against Xander Perot. He was playing Lost Zone Kyogre, and he goes, my Gardevoir opponents did not play it like that. And granted, like, again, he still drew a bit slow, but, like, it just happens. One game, Xander drew very poorly. I drew pretty poorly in the other, and then, like, one of the games was okay. But I mean, Lost Zone does that, right? Like, they Lost Zone some bad cards. They start a bit slow. Like, it's not. I would say the Gardevoir overall is more consistent.
Sure.
But obviously, slightly less powerful. So, I mean, if they draw really well, it can be hard. But there's lots you can do. And again, like, I feel like it's a very fun and like skillful matchup. It is slightly unfavored, but not by a meaningful margin, I would say.
Yeah, because I think the prevailing thought was just, oh, Gardevoir is a bad play because Lost Box is so heavily played. And I think you're, you know, here to say and kind of proving that, no, that you know, it's maybe, you know, not something you want to see every single round, but certainly far from what, you know, a lot of conventional thought is right now on the matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's not. What's I going to say? It's like the finals is not a good indication of exactly how it goes normally. Right. And like, you know, I would probably encourage some different games. The second one was good for the most part. Like you can see the different tools that you can use, but it wasn't quite, you know, exactly how it should go from both sides. That being said, it's an interesting type of Pokemon. And the reason that people I think are a little bit wrong about the, well, not wrong, but you know, can't think about the matchup is because you have to play really incrementally. You don't just like do something and like, this is your counter to the deck or this play is great. You know, like I smash this or whatever. Like you have to do very small little things that gradually build towards like an end result. And that's not super easy to quantify all the way from turn one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's
won't notice the mistakes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. And it's, yeah, it's that long grind. Again, like you said, like players are less likely to see the effect that a, you know, an action that they take one turn could have 2, 3, 4 turns down the road.
Yeah.
So, well, that's very interesting. Again, congratulations on winning Milwaukee. That's like such a, like just for any player to win. But like, again, there's this kind of, you know, certainly some dispelling of the myth, I think, in a lot of players here in minds, like, you know, Australia is legit. I knew this, like players are just players and there's great players. I know a ton of great players in Australia, but it's just, you know, again, like I'm happy that, that it worked out the way it did. And, you know, just a really great accomplishment. So congrats.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, Henry, let's move into our card of the day. So for those listening, this is a segment on Tag Team where we discuss a card that has some particular relevance. Maybe it's a card that you grew up with in your collection, has some kind of personal relevance, or it's a card from a deck that you may have played in the past that's really special to you. But I want to ask you, Henry, what is the card of the day?
Ooh, there's so many to choose from. I think it's got to go to Giratina Garchomp Tag Team GX.
Okay, excellent. And why is that?
I think it's my favorite deck of all time. Specifically, and I think that the GX attack was so cool. Just discard your opponent's Pokemon. That's it. That's the whole effect. And yet it was so good.
So are you talking expanded or are you talking like with Double Dragon?
It's Magius Giratina Garchomp.
Yeah.
That was sick. Where you, like the deck where you try and be from behind and like, you know, set up these knockouts and it's like, it's a control deck, but you're going to take all your prizes.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, right. So for people that don't know, just kind of describe the deck. Cause it is very, like you said, play from behind, kind of a little bit unorthodox.
Yeah. So there's this Miss Magius. You could knock it out, its ability, and then draw until you have 7. And then you had some tools that would make your attacks cost less if you were losing. And you had reset stamp, which could put your opponent to the same amount of cards in hand as they have prizes. And you had Power Plant, which is like Path to the Peak. And you had this GGN GX, which is your GX attack. And you could pick one of your opponent's Pokemon and discard it. And so you would kind of like play from behind and then go like reset stamp, Power Plant, GX one of their attacker with all the energy. And then you kind of like just like sweep them over 2 turns. And it was sick. It was like not even like playing Pokemon. It was so like different and alien to like any other deck that it was just awesome. So cool.
You liked it. Why did you play a lot of mirrors in that time with that deck or no? Because I imagine that mirror match is just horrific.
It was kind of interesting. I think it was kind of bad at the end, but like, I don't know. It was interesting. But I remember, so I played that. It was the only time I've played a deck with very little practice. I played maybe 8 games of the deck the day before because it had just kind of popped up. It wasn't very known.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Joao, he messaged me, he's like, play this, it's like broken. I was like, sure. So I played it and it was sick. And then I got to win an in for top 8 at Brisbane Regionals. And my opponent was playing Mewtwo. He opened Reshizard, I think. Yeah, he opened Reshizard and he didn't want to bench his Mewtwo because the Giratina Garchomp's attack can put 40 damage on any one of your opponent's Pokemon, which sets it up for a knockout with the second attack. So he's like, I don't want to bench it. I don't want to get damage. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to just GG end, which discards a Pokemon, his only Pokemon in the active, the Reshizard. And I won without taking prizes, benching my opponent out without taking a knockout, which I think is kind of novel.
That is quite novel.
And he's just like, what? Why did I do that? And I was like, yeah, that's fun.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Well, that is a great card of the day, Henry. Thanks for sharing.
My pleasure.
Very cool. So now let's discuss the sponsor for today. The presenting sponsor of Tag Team is Manscaped, the company that offers the best products for your men's grooming needs. If you need to GG end some of those down there hairs, Manscaped has got you covered. Manscaped products have been a huge part of my morning routines for the last year, and you'll love everything that they have to offer. Speaking of offer, Manscaped is offering their Platinum Package. Comes with the Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer that I personally love. Also comes with the Lawnmower 4.0, some shampoo, conditioner, body wash, free pair of the boxers, along with a ton of other goodies. So dive right in, grab yourself some over at manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM. You're going to get 20% off plus free shipping. Not only does that help you make you look, smell, feel your best, but it also helps us at the cast as well. So head on over to manscaped.com. Use that code TAGTEAM. Get 20% off plus free shipping. Manscaped.com, code tag team, 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. So looking forward, Henry, you got your play locked in for Fresno? I mean, when somebody wins a tournament like this, like, is there a reason to change? Or, you know, you're kind of chilling. Like, you could just experiment a little bit. Like, how are you feeling heading into the next major tournament?
Pretty good. I feel like I can't test too much for it because we're going to NAIC really soon. So I can, you know, probably should put some time towards that. But I mean, look, as I said, I like playing a deck that I enjoy, and Gardevoir is the one I enjoy the most. So I mean, look, at this stage, it'll be Gardevoir. I'd be surprised if it changes, but hey, maybe someone will rock up, tell me the night before and be like, play this, man. Trust me, trust me, trust me. And then maybe I will, but well, I'm pretty sure it'll be God.
Well, I was going to say, what would it take for you to switch at this point? Just one trusted friend saying, you have to play this, you have to play this? Or would some testing make you change? Like, what would be the tipping point for you to change off of Gardevoir for Fresno?
It'd have to be sick. Like, it'd have to be a sick deck. It'd have to be really cool. Something like, you know, novel and like interesting and not with a Mew in it, like not with Mew VMAX in it. I mean, funnily enough, that would probably be like the next deck I would consider. Actually, I swore I would never play it, but close to that. I don't know. I mean, I really like Gardevoir, so I think I'll just keep doing that and see if I can prove some people wrong about the Losso matchup again. Because, man, I had a lot of people in this room. I had a judge come up to me before the finals and tell me, "Hey, man, good luck. You're gonna need it. Like, that's such a rough matchup." And I was like, "Bro,
you're supposed to be impartial."
Yeah, I beat like three of them. All right.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That's really funny. Okay, so for players out there that might be listening to the cast that are going to Fresno, like, what are some other plays that you would suggest for them? So, you know, a lot of players maybe haven't put the time in recently to Gardevoir, but, you know, just hearing from you, maybe, you know, you could validate or not, I guess, some of their plays. Like, what would be maybe a top three that you would consider beyond Gardevoir? You already maybe mentioned Mew VMAX as a potential possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mew VMAX is a good deck. It's really consistent. You can do some stuff with it, like draw cards, pretty fun.
I do like drawing cards. Judge Path's
always, who doesn't? Judge Path's pretty good. I mean, like, you know, if you want to just high roll with the fusion, you can, but I think like Mew Path's in a reasonable spot. Lost and Kyogre is always good. It's a deck that, again, you know, if people don't play correctly against it, it's really, really strong. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be rewarded for really good play. Again, pretty hard. But if you're more practiced on that, you can go for it. And then, I mean, really, you can't go wrong with an Arceus deck. Like, consistent, strong, Judge Path. Umbreon is also, that's a really cool deck, actually, as far as Arceus piles go. Like, being able to use the Umbreon ability and like bring stuff up is like really nice, and you have some cool control with your gameplay. It's like you have not many decisions to make, but they're pretty impactful, and so, you know, you get rewarded for doing some nice decisions.
What are some decks that you would not recommend to players for this weekend?
Lugia Vista.
Really? Okay, huge thumbs down from Henry for Lugia.
That deck stinks, man. It's okay. I say that it's got a good matchup spread, but boy, does it feel terrible to play. It's like chewing glass. You have like zero control over what you do. Like what? Aside from playing well and, you know, not putting down too many two prizes and like collapse some stuff away. Like to be fair, you do have to play it well, but I just feel like you have very little control over how your games go. Like you just flip some coins and if I get it, I get it.
But, the Lugia lottery.
That's it. The Japanese called it Pachinko Lugia for a reason. So.
That's so funny. Okay. Yeah. So big thumbs down on the Lugia. Yeah, I mean, any other decks that you know, would just say stay away from?
Let me think. What else we got? I mean, I feel like I shouldn't even have to say Gudra, but for the love of God, don't play Gudra. What else?
Maraidon? I mean, I think you lost to a Maraidon.
Oh, man, I lost to myself. That was so bad. I got like a fire lit under me after I played so poorly in that match. I was like, I can't make another mistake for the whole tournament. I did reasonably well on that account. But Maraidon, I wouldn't bother, guys. I think, like, you know, you can play better decks. I think, actually, like you mentioned, I would avoid, like we said, Gardevoir. And I guess by extension, Lost Zone, if you're not practiced on them. Those are decks that, I mean, Lost Zone maybe less so, but you... If you're not practiced on them and you feel like you're not going to play them like really, really well, probably look at something else that's a little bit more forgiving.
Yeah, and that's maybe a bit of a segue into the new format with Paldea Evolved, because I think a lot of players are looking at Guardi and Lost Box is still, you know, being extremely relevant, maybe even Guardi more so, tipping up with, you know, the new Iono release and, you know, some other cool tricks that it gains from the new expansion. So let's shift a little bit our discussion to NAIC and what testing that you've done. Have you prepared much for NAIC? I mean, I know obviously you're still playing regionals in this format, but how much have you been looking ahead to the Paldea Evolved format?
I was like a while ago, I looked fairly far ahead. I keep really like intense tabs on Japan. Like I follow all like the results and from all their city leagues and everything. I look at all their lists. Like I save a bunch of them. Like it's a really good habit to get into. I think it's like an easy way you can get a bit of a head start. I played a bunch of games myself. Shout out to Robin Schultz and Limitless, because he has massively increased my productivity in terms of testing. Yeah. I get two screens up, one Limitless tabletop on each. I could play a whole game in like 5 minutes against myself, because I would usually test against myself, at least initially. And it's incredible. You just play the game like so quickly. And so I played a bunch of Gardevoir, played a bunch of Chen Pao, played a bunch of some other deck I can't remember. But yeah, especially like Gardevoir and Chen Pao, which are both like pretty interesting decks. It's like Chen Pao is not solved yet at all.
Yes.
But it's very interesting. And Gardevoir obviously is really good, like what, super odd reversal, Iono. The only thing I don't like about it is that I feel like it gets a little bit too strong. I feel like it's less fun to play because it gets easier, you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like the
what
odds
is that
stacked against you.
So it's, you know, gonna be like, you kind of feel like it's the big bad of the next format, without a doubt.
I think it's pretty damn good. I think like it loses its weaknesses, a lot of them, right? Because it gets a really good draw supporter in Iono.
Yep.
It gets like Roxanne and Judge in the same thing, so more consistent. Better Lost Zone matchup a little bit as a result. It gets reversal, so Baby Guardi hits like a truck.
Yes.
And then the other thing, which is crazy, is that its weakness is it gets super odd. Like, what the hell? At the moment, you have to like ration your attackers like really well, because like you might have to Miriam, or like, you know, you might have to...
You have to spend like a turn decide with...
All right, so like...
Yeah,
yep. So you know, I can't play Boss and Miriam in the same turn. So on this turn, I got a Miriam, and then on this turn, I got a Boss, and I've got to use Zacian sometimes instead of Baby Gardevoir, because I don't want to like lose my draw support and my attacker.
And I have to take a turn to Cresselia to heal some damage so that I can save my Zacian from getting knocked out. Yeah, it can get a little convoluted for sure.
There you go. Or I've lost my Manaphy, so now I can't Roxanne and Miriam in the same turn. Doesn't matter. I got Super Rod now. So I feel like it makes the deck so strong just by like removing that supporter restriction. It's like really, really good, honestly. Like the deck is so strong, and I think we're gonna see it like in droves at NAIC compared to how we are at the moment.
Yeah, and it seems to me, from what, you know, some of the testing that I've done and the lists that I've seen and results that I've looked at, it seems like it has very few checks to it. You know, like, can you think of, you know, like, what are like the counters that you're envisioning for Gardevoir at this point in time?
I mean, I don't think there's that many. I think it's just path Arceus decks and hope that they get far enough behind. I mean, I think it's still reasonably fair. I don't think it's like crazy broken, but I think it's really, really strong. I think it's the best deck still. Losso matchup still is not like absurdly favorable by any means. It probably still just becomes even or maybe slightly better, which is actually a point on the current format, is that I think regardless of what you do to lists, there aren't really any auto wins or auto losses for decks by and large, which is great. You can pretty much play whatever deck you want and still, you know, have a good run, which is cool. I think it's great. I think the match.
I think it's a really, yeah, really healthy format right now, for sure.
Oh yeah, it's the best I've played in years. Like it really is. But I mean, yeah, I don't think there's super tons of checks, but also we probably wouldn't have seen them yet. I think is important to note, because they've only had one tournament in Japan and Taiwan where it's early on, so the best deck's probably going to win. And I think if we see any counters, they're going to pop up nice and soon at NAIC.
That's interesting. So what are some of the other things that you've looked at or thought about or seen from Japanese results that are not Gardevoir, maybe that are not Chinpao, not Lost Box, just maybe some of the more kind of off the beaten path decks that you're interested in either trying or have tried and, you know, can give us some insight on?
I'd like to try Fortress. I don't think it's very good, but it's kind of like Tina Trump, like I talked about earlier. So that'd be cool to give that a go. I know that Spiritomb is pretty prevalent in terms of different decks, which is interesting. Colorless Lugia, I think is worse than Single Strike still, but kind of a cool like variant of Lugia. And then the other one that's interesting is that always how Arceus decks pivot, because it looks like they're going to pivot to maybe Flying Pika again, because they can use it against Chen Pao, which previously would be a bit of a bad matchup. So it looks like, and also Flying Pika like is pretty good against the Lugia variants as well. Although they have Luxray, so there's a lot to talk about there.
How impactful is a card like Luxray? Because from what I've seen, it's included in, you know, Gardevoir, could be included in Lost Box, could be included in Lugia decks. I mean, it kind of seems like this card that is cropping up, and I'm sure there are even more beyond that, as kind of this comeback mechanic, a very nice, solid one-prizer that you can get into the game, you know, relatively early. Obviously, you have to be behind, but how much do you think that card is going to see play?
A fair bit. So, like, it's a good Flying Pika counter in decks that can't otherwise beat it. There's also just a sick mechanic. Like, how cool is that? It's actually a brand new mechanic. And they seem to be... serious. Like, for a long time, they were just recycling or reprinting nonsense. But now it's like, that's really cool. And I think I saw an interview with a game designer from Pokemon who said, like, we've been wanting to print effects that have not been printed before, which is, like, good on them. About time.
I agree. Yes. Yeah, totally.
About time. But the Luxray is really good. It's a great one prize attacker, like with slow decks like Gardevoir. Like it's really good, and it's a good way to, you know, get a bit of, you know, an advantage back against Lugia. It's gonna be pretty impactful for sure.
Are there some decks that you've seen that are maybe performing well that you don't understand why, or that you're kind of skeptical about?
I don't think so. I think that. I think Palkia and Chen Pao just has to be bad. I guess one thing I could talk about. Like, I get why it's there, but I feel like surely there's just like a better way to build Chen Pao that you don't need to play like Tuto of some like V Star line. Mm-hmm. But like everything already hits for weakness because of Lugia. So I feel like if you're gonna do that, you should probably maybe just build the deck a bit better.
You don't value like the you don't value the kind of alternate attacker, the V-star power, or are you thinking that, you know, you could play like one of the stones or something? Like what is your thinking there with the no Palkia? Because I know that that's very popular, I think, from early lists that I've seen.
Yeah. I just don't want to mix and match. I'm playing a stage two. I want to commit to the stage two. You know what I mean? Like I want to like play like four Chen Pao so that I always open it and always get to use the ability. I want to play four Frigibacks so I can always put the Frigibacks down. Play four Irida. I want to just like I'm doing it. If I'm playing a stage two like deck that isn't like Gardevoir with like built-in trade, man, I'm like full committing. So I don't really want to have to just like play the Palkia and then like get some weird bench space. I get that, you know, disincentivizes the boss KO on the Max Caliber, but like the way I was trying Chen Pao was like, if you play like enough switch effects or whatever, you can get your Max Caliber, you can switch between like 2 to 3 Chen Pao, and you take every energy out of your deck, and you just dump them on the board. And if your opponent knocks your Max Caliber out, I don't care. I've got like 10 energy on the board. So like, I think like surely that it makes it a little bit too linear, but like against Lost Zone or like Flying Pikachu, Palkia already gets one shot. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's a massive like, you know, bonus. So
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I cut you off from another deck that you were talking about. So I apologize for that.
No, that's okay.
Do you remember what it is?
Yeah, I think the Drifloon's just pretty bad Gardevoir, so I think I probably wouldn't bother.
So you're saying sell your Champions Festival immediately?
I'm saying buy my Champions Festivals just in case you need it for Drifloon and that I was wrong.
I did sell one of my Japanese Champions Festivals for quite a hefty price. Ooh. So
I might try and get in on that. But the thing is, actually, I was a bit disappointed. This is very tangential, but I was hoping I could play Champions Festival at Milwaukee, because I was like, my friends were like peer pressuring me into it. I was eventually caved and I was like, all right, if I do it and I get on stream, because I'm pretty sure this is allowed, I was going to double check first, but I'll swap my regular Champions Festival out and I'll put in the champion stamped one and I'll go on stream and I'll slam it down and everyone at home can watch and be like,
whoa,
that's wild. Yeah, and I was like, I'll do it. All right, it doesn't matter if it like potentially damages the card and it's gonna cost me whatever. So I was gonna do it, but I ended up not playing the card at all, because I was like, I'm not just gonna play a card just to do some fancy dumb stunt.
Well now I gotta know, what is a champions festival? What's the market for that right now?
I have no idea, actually. I haven't got an offer on one in terms of like specifically, so I've tried to get a price, but you'd have to imagine it'd be a couple of thousand or something.
At least, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a fun story, though. Played your Champions Festival. That's really cool. So, so for NAIC, you know, I mean, we're still a ways away, but when you're looking forward and you're looking ahead to a major tournament like that, where obviously you want to perform extremely well and it's in a new format, where do you start with that? Like, where are you starting with the new format, just from a philosophical perspective, maybe not a specific deck perspective, but like, how are you approaching heading into NAIC in this new format with cards that we haven't played tournaments before with?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tried and true method, and I'm really interested to see if this stays true or changes, because I think it's starting to change a bit. But for the longest time, the philosophy was, new set, first day of tournament, play the most consistent, strong, inherently strong deck you can, right? Mm-hmm. And you just, you know, your deck's good, your deck's better than other people's decks, just go nuts. Like, we saw it all, like, time and time again, like Mewtwo Welder that I played at Worlds, we saw then like Firebox at LAIC, like with Robin. It's a pretty common trend that this happens. But did get like bucked a little bit by Alex Szymanski this year at EUIC, which is probably the first time it's broken. I'm interested to see if this holds true, because now we have so many results from Japan in like such intense like lists. So it could probably be a little bit different nowadays compared to maybe in the past, but generally that's the philosophy. So you try and find the most strongest, like consistent version of a deck that you think is really strong, and go, you know, go nuts with that. Try and build it better than everyone else.
Yeah, kind of maybe a little bit more vanilla-ish, I guess, if you could use that term, like just very straightforward, very consistent, just playing the archetype that's kind of handed to you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think like, and a lot of your bad matchups, you can win early on in the format because they're not optimized. Like the decks might not be consistent or stuff like that, so.
But you think that might be changing. So you think that players are going to potentially, and you know, again, you're saying you've been noticing this trend of players countering what they expect other players to start with.
Yeah, I think it might start changing. So we're going to see. But also, if everyone's deck lists are much better quality, then, you know, that doesn't necessarily hold as true. And you might get more value out of trying to counter them rather than trying to just out consistency them.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I mean, we're all, yeah, all eyes are going to be in Columbus, Ohio, little old Columbus, Ohio, where I currently reside for NAIC in just under a month now. It's going to be really, really exciting. I'm excited for it. I know. When are you getting in to Columbus for NAIC?
Should be the Monday, I think.
Okay, the Monday before the event. Well, I know there will be a lot of testing going on in your hotel room, as there will be in mine. We are so excited. Thank you so much, Henry, for joining me on the cast today. This was really a fantastic talk. I hope the listeners at home learned a lot. You definitely shared a lot of great insight. Before we go, do you have anything that you want to plug? Do you have any shout-outs that you want to give?
I've got a Twitter. I post some funny stuff on there and some useful stuff. You're welcome to follow my Twitch. I won't be streaming until I get back in Australia. And I do offer coaching. I don't really advertise it. I don't really post about it. But while I'm here, I may as well say that. I do think I'm like reasonably good at it as well. So if you'd like to, you know, get a bit of help and up your game, feel free to contact me. Pretty limited until NAIC, but afterwards, hit me up and see what we can do.
Sounds good. Thank you once again, Henry, for joining me on the cast today. If you want to check out the cast, you can head on over to Twitter at Tag Team Pokemon. You can find myself at Real John Walter and our normal co-host Riley over at Smiles with Riles. Thank you all so much for listening to the cast today. We'll catch you on the next one. See ya.